This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs. This report is supported by DailyProgress.com. Find out the latest happenings in Central Virginia at DailyProgress.com. This Thursday is Thomas Jefferson's birthday, and as has been the case for the past 15 years, a Charlottesville organization devoted to the protection of free expression has handed out its annual Thomas Jefferson Muzzle Awards to mark the occasion. A Charlottesville organization devoted to protecting the First Amendment has handed out its annual Thomas Jefferson Muzzle Awards. For its 15th year, the Thomas Jefferson Center for Free Expression has handed out 15 muzzles to organizations and individuals that the center believes has somehow violated the principles of the First Amendment. Center Director Robert O'Neill explains why President George Bush is the recipient of one of this year's dubious awards.
The use and authorization of clandestine surveillance, including the tapping of telephone conversations involving U.S. citizens. That, we all thought, was clearly forbidden by the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act legislation, except and unless there was a subpoena or a warrant issued by the so-called FISA court. President Bush, soon after September 11th, we now know, it didn't come out until December of last year, but we now know that on a number of occasions over that period, the president did direct the National Security Administration to undertake not only the tapping of telephone conversations involving foreigners, but some even involving U.S. citizens. It was requested from, but pretty expressly denied by Congress in the Patriot Act and subsequent legislation. The claim that it's somehow within the inherent powers of the executive also just doesn't seem to measure up.
The administration has defended the surveillance program as necessary to national security, but O'Neill says a muzzle is well deserved.
If you chart things from the time in December when the New York Times first revealed this practice, it is certainly highly probable that people in this country who are in the course of communicating by telephone with business partners or academic or scientific colleagues in suspect countries, for example, those countries that are on the trade embargo list, if they now have to fear that even their end of the conversation may be being tapped without any notice or warning, without any approval from any government court or congressional action, it's hard to think that won't have a deterrent effect on the freedom of these people to speak openly and candidly with their colleagues and counterparts in other countries.
What would you say to charges from some groups that by denouncing the president in this way, that you're simply a liberal organization or something like that?
Well, we try to point out each year that we do maintain considerable balance in our muzzles. And this year, for example, we're just as tough on the audience at the University of Connecticut that shouted down and drowned out a speech by Ann Coulter. The 2 days before, the audience at UConn in Storrs, Connecticut, had been really very tolerant of Cindy Sheehan when she came to attack the president. When Ann Coulter came essentially to praise the president and support his policies, the audience took a very different view and shouted her down. So we think that that kind of partisanship or imbalance deserves a muzzle. We also point to a superintendent or a principal of a school in Florida who took personnel action against a teacher who had written a very thoughtful letter expressing, to be sure, politically incorrect views about immigration. And basically, it was an anti-immigration statement. But in our view, it was a communication that was aimed for members of Congress, thus coming not only within the Free Speech Clause, but also the right to petition government for redress of grievances. And the idea of taking a teacher with an exemplary record of long service and imposing any discipline on her for having expressed her honest views, concerns about immigration, in communicating to her congressman, we think that's outrageous. So we call them as we see them, Sometimes they seem to come up on one side of the aisle, other times on the other, but we don't take that as a decisive factor. It's who committed a transgression, how serious was it, what was the impact on free expression, regardless of which side it came from.
While there's no explicit thread that connects this year's batch of muzzles, many have been awarded to organizations that have punished people for saying things that the entity didn't like. The Federal Department of Homeland Security gets one for preventing air marshals from publicly expressing security concerns.
And prevented a particular air marshal named Frank Terreri from making air travelers aware of certain genuine safety concerns that he had learned about during the course of his official duty. All he wanted to do was to make air passengers and the federal government more aware of some safety problems that he had observed during the course of his job. But the TSA, now Homeland Security, policy says that federal air marshals can't say a word publicly about their jobs, period.
And so what were the kinds of things that he was trying to say?
He had observed some flaws in the passenger check-in procedure, in the handling of luggage. I think he'd also picked up a couple of problems in the inspection of planes between flights. And who better to observe and comment on problems of this kind than an active federal air marshal is right there.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg was censured for revoking a permit for a public arts display, and a town council in Washington state was honored for banning the use of certain words during its public meetings.
Well, they'd apparently had it with public debate over authorizing the building of a Walmart store. So, eventually, they not only forbade the use of the specific generic trade name Walmart, but also of big box retailers. And finally, they even banned the use of the term moratorium, which I suppose was designed to forestall further discussion about the wisdom of having or not a moratorium within this community on the building of other big box retail stores.
Another muzzle has been awarded to William Paterson University in New Jersey for attempting to censure a student and staffer who objected to an email invitation he had received about a lesbian-themed film series that was scheduled to be shown on campus. O'Neill describes why the university tried to punish Jihad Daniel.
Simply for responding one-on-one to an email that was sent by the director of the Women's Studies program announcing an upcoming film series in which gay and lesbian themes were to be featured. He is a devout Muslim. He believes that homosexuality is essentially sinful, unacceptable. So he wrote back to the director of women's studies, says, please don't send me any more of these communications. In my view, the content of this film series is a perversion. Well, the administration, first the equal opportunity officer and ultimately even the president, looked through dictionaries, and they thought that one who calls another guilty of perversion is contributing to a hostile workplace environment, that constitutes actionable discrimination under the New Jersey public employment policies. They ultimately did not put the reprimand in his file, but they were prepared to and certainly made quite clear their disapproval of his use of really the only word that could be troublesome is perversion. He was speaking literally from his Islamic religious perspective and simply declaring as one colleague to another, get me off your mailing list because what you've sent me, in my view, the content of this program is a perversion. And for that, he gets called on the carpet. That seems to us a triumph of political correctness gone mad.
Other muzzles awarded to the federal government go to the Justice Department for demanding in court that the internet company Google hand over search records, and one to Federal Communications Chair Kevin Martin for recommending that decency standards be extended to cable and satellite programming.
The focus of the muzzle is the new FCC chairman's insistence that non-licensed broadcasters, that is, cable channels, even direct and satellite TV providers, are potentially or theoretically subject to the same indecency ban as indisputably applies, the Supreme Court has upheld it in that context, applies to licensed broadcasters. And Chairman Martin, not long ago, issued essentially a threat. If you don't take more steps, he said to cable and DirecTV, if you don't take more steps to control and regulate indecency in your media, cleaning up Tony Soprano's language and so on, if you don't do that, then we'll find some way to make you do it. Now, it's not entirely clear what he means. It's plain that the existing legislation applies only to licensed broadcasters. And, in fact, several federal courts of appeals have specifically struck down local attempts to impose indecency or profanity standards on cable channels. No one has even thought about trying to impose such standards on satellite and direct broadcasters. So, as the law now stands, it's perfectly clear that the FCC has absolutely no authority to regulate the content of cable, much less direct and satellite broadcasts.
Another individual in the government, Representative Joe Barton of Texas, receives a muzzle for something he did as chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
It involved a government scientist who had sought to express a view with respect to global warming, a view that was not acceptable to the administration and for which he was initially reprimanded and ultimately essentially prevented from publicly expressing this view. That case is part of a much larger array of concerns about freedom, freedom of expression, academic freedom in science to discuss publicly controversial issues. Global warming is probably the most visible of these issues. It happens to be the one on which we target. What's fascinating about the muzzle to Representative Barton is open disagreement among even fairly conservative Republican members of Congress on how one ought to deal with such an issue. And we quote at some length one of Barton's Republican colleagues who said, look, I may not be any happier about this stuff than you are, but the moment you start stifling candid reports, accurate reports by the scientific community, you totally undermine the information base on which we as the United States Congress need to rely in terms of adopting, shaping public policy. This is profoundly dangerous.
For a full list of the 2006 Muzzle Awards, visit the Thomas Jefferson Center's website at tjcenter.org. I'm Sean Tubbs reporting for the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you'd like to discuss this story, why not visit whoville.net, an online bulletin board about Charlottesville, whoville.net. To find out more about CPN, check out our website at sevillepodcast.com. CPN is a public community service of WordCast Productions. Thanks for listening.